everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio on a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. You made Triple Play Thursday. Who requested that there?
So that is coming to us from listener who goes by RDL. I'm guessing initials there. And the band is called Ovlov.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And if you want to get through to us, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Legendary director Martin Scorsese has a new film coming out this weekend, an epic gangster film with Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci called The Irishman. And it's getting incredible reviews. And this is a big one. It's 3.5 hours long. It's going to be in the movie theaters for a few weeks, and then it's going to come on Netflix. It's always exciting when Scorsese releases a new movie. It always is, especially something like this, especially something with De Niro, Pacino, and Joe Pesci. This is a big deal. Martin Scorsese's made some of the best movies of all time, and he's certainly considered one of the great film directors that's ever lived. And so Vulture.com wrote an article where they ranked every Martin Scorsese movie from worst to best. And so we're going to go through that, and I want to hear from you guys at 312-981-7200 for Martin Scorsese. Now, Scorsese's been in the news lately because he was talking a little trash about comic book movies and superhero movies and stuff, and he caught a little flack for that. I don't agree with what he said, because I think I think some of the comic book movies are really great, and many of them are very entertaining. And it takes, I think, skill as a filmmaker to make some of these. I think Logan is one of the best movies, that I've seen in a few years, and that's a comic book movie.
Yeah,
and I like Spider-Man 2, the Sam Raimi. That's one of my favorites.
Right,
that's a beautifully made movie.
I think what he was trying to get at, somewhat ineloquently, or maybe he just didn't have enough time in his initial statements. He got the opportunity to write an op-ed for the New York Times, which clarified how he felt. And I didn't agree with everything he said. But I think what he was trying to get at was there's this sort of movie by committee that's happening a lot.
Yeah.
And I'd be the first one to say that there's some really great superhero movies out there. I'm a big fan of the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff by James Gunn.
Me too.
And James Gunn does not make a movie by committee.
Nope.
He makes exactly what he wants to make. But
yeah, look at Slither.
Yeah.
Which is a movie I adore. That movie.
It's just a bee sting. Yeah.
I love that movie.
But he comes out of Troma. You know, he's a total genre guy. But there's a lot of stuff in some of the Marvel movies that are just kind of part of the machine.
Yeah.
A lot of action scenes are actually completely done by second unit, which is kind of weird when you have some really great talent. Like, who is the guy behind Black Panther? It's escaping.
Ryan Coogler.
Amazing director.
Yeah.
Amazing. He can shoot action, too. Look at Creed.
Yeah.
Some of the best boxing I've ever seen in a movie.
Creed was one of those movies that blindsided me.
Absolutely.
Like, I went in there going, all right. You know, like, I was just thinking, oh, God, it's another, we get Rocky again.
Mm-hmm.
That movie is great. And the second one's good, too. But the first one?
Out of nowhere.
One of my favorite films of that year. And also, the second best Rocky movie.
Right.
Without question, the second best Rocky movie. And Coogler's a great director.
He
did a great job with Black Panther.
But my point is that a lot of the action stuff in Black Panther, second unit, he didn't get to touch it.
Yeah.
And which is sad, because the rest of the movie is really, really well done. But there are some action sequences in that were clearly pre-visualized, done a lot of CGI. So I think that's what Scorsese's trying to nip at.
Yeah.
While he's not quite getting there. It's nice that someone of immeasurable influence in the cinematic community, is saying something about it, and that maybe it will convince Marvel and Disney, it might be doubtful, to change their tune on letting directors be directors.
Yeah.
And it's a group effort. Scorsese knows that.
Yeah.
But you got to have some sort of unifying vision, and it probably shouldn't be from a boardroom.
Well, I agree with you. And those are issues that I think a lot of people have with commercial cinema in general. But specifically, I mean, there's a superhero movie like every weekend.
Right.
Almost. And, you know, my dad's sick of them.
My dad is like,
I can't see another super, you know, like every time, because we go to the movies every Saturday.
Sure.
And sometimes we end up seeing, you know, a superhero movie because inevitably that's like one of the big movies that opens. So we go. And my dad's like, you know, if like after every superhero movie, he's like, how many more of these are there going to be?
Yeah. And I barely made it through Endgame, not because I thought it was bad or anything. I was just like, okay, I feel like I've seen a lot of it. But you mentioned Logan, which is a great example of what happens when you buck the studio. The
Absolutely.
Studio did not want to make a rated R Logan movie. James Mangold wanted to do that for years.
Yep.
And then when they finally let him do it, he made an amazing character piece.
A great movie. A great movie. And it's a comic book movie, obviously.
Totally.
But it's also, it feels like a Western and a drama more than anything else. And the performances were so good in that movie. Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart, and I'm forgetting the little girl's name, but all three of them were unbelievable in that movie. And I cried at the end. I don't cry at comic book movies. Although when Spider-Man disappeared in, what the hell was the infinite battle? Infinite
the Spider-Verse?
No. When Thanos hit
Endgame. Or not Endgame, it was the Infinity War.
Infinity War. Yeah. When Spider-Man disappeared, I was like, ooh, I was a little sad.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good stuff to be done.
Yeah.
There's Tom Holland is a great rising star in that. Robert Downey Jr. has revitalized his entire career by doing those movies.
But Scorsese, you know, Scorsese caught the ire of the fanboys, though, this past week.
Oh, he did.
And I mean, you know, the internet, that's what it's made for. And the internet is made to yell about things that, you know, that aren't really that important. And, you know, going after Scorsese last week, all the fanboys went after him.
I just wish they would open their ears a little bit and instead of saying, well, what does he know? He's an old man. I'm like, well, he also is like a multi-generational filmmaker.
If you dismiss Martin Scorsese, you do not know film. That's it. Period. He's one of the greatest directors that's ever lived. And everybody, I look forward to, I can't wait to see The Irishman. I don't care it's 3.5 hours long. I couldn't care less. I can't wait to see it, and I think it's going to be fantastic. I'm going on a Friday morning at 11 a.m. That's how excited I am about it.
Go get some lunch afterwards.
No, it'd be dinner time afterwards. So we're talking Scorsese movies. What are your favorites? Here's the little introduction that Vulture.com put together. When Martin Scorsese decided he wasn't going to be a priest, his reasons were simple. I began to think this vocation I had was for the wrong reasons. It shouldn't be about you, he explained to Richard Schickel in the excellent book Conversations with Scorsese. It should be about others. Plus, growing up with asthma and unable to play sports, he wasn't sure he wanted a life that would add to his isolation. It was going to be about cutting myself off from the world, he said, about becoming a man of the cloth, not being a participant in it. In the best sense, Scorsese's movies have always been about him, passionately, deeply personal works that catalog his hang-ups, his obsessions, riffing on religion, spiritual torment, guilt, and the difficult road to transcendence. Often through gangster pictures and crime dramas, and although he remains one of the most movie-obsessed of all directors, his films rarely feel like the work of a man cut off from the world. Quite to the contrary, they're fully engaged with their specific milieus, whether Tibet or Little Italy. His movies feel alive, inviting, even when his characters are mobsters or monsters. They work. It's the work of a true believer. That devotion inspires an equally rapturous following. And as such, it's probably best to warn you that our rankings of Scorsese films will not perfectly overlap with your own list, because his films are always made with care and a near religious fervor. Even his weakest have their selling points. He has as many classics as overlooked masterpieces, and no two people will agree on which is which. So as The Irishman prepares to hit theaters and IMAX and Netflix in November, we bring out his movies. So they're going to rank them. There's 28 of them, or 29 of them. And now, before we get to this, Tom, do you have a favorite Scorsese movie?
I've got a favorite, and I've got what I think is his best.
Oh, well, okay. All right, I can understand that. I can see the difference. All right, first of all, let's go with your favorite.
My favorite is The Departed.
What?
I know. I love it. I think it's such a bat crap crazy movie. So much goes down.
I enjoy the hell out of it. I just don't think it. I mean, he, you know, I mean, God bless the Academy. They finally gave the guy an Oscar, but not for that movie.
I know. But I, in terms of Scorsese movies I've seen the most number of times, it's The Departed.
God, are you kidding me?
I know.
Wow.
I know.
That's weird,
I just,
man.
I get so riled up whenever I see it, if it's on TV or something. Yeah. And I own it.
No,
and if I see it's on TV,
listen,
I get
I've seen it a few times, you know, but it's not one of my go-tos. Definitely not one of my go-tos for Scorsese. All right, now, so that's your favorite, but what do you think is the best?
Best movie ever made was Raging Bull.
Mm.
I cannot believe how good Raging Bull is. And I know Taxi Driver's nipping at the heels, but Raging Bull is just unreal. And his use of black and white is superb.
Yeah. My favorite is Taxi Driver. I can't measure how much I love that movie and how it gets to me every time I watch it. There's not a better movie made about isolation and loneliness than Taxi Driver. And I think it's the best New York movie ever made of that specific time. And the performances are just superlative. I love that movie. I mean, truly, truly love it. I love every frame of it. I could watch it every day. And there are things about it that are just so beautiful and so subtle. I mean, the scene, the scene in the movie where that just makes me go nuts every time is when, you know, Peter Boyle plays Wizard in it, and he's like this, he's like the father figure of these taxi drivers, telling all kinds of stories, and he's supposed to have the most experience, and he knows everything, and he's got the wisdom of all the hackers, and so. When De Niro goes to the restaurant and then goes outside and tells Peter Boyle, hey, I got some bad things in my head right now. And he's trying to communicate what's going on. Like, man, I'm losing it. I don't know if I can take this anymore. I might do something bad. And he's trying to express this to Peter Boyle, and Peter Boyle just gets really dismissive. He's like, I don't know. What do I know? You know, go find a girl. Go get a drink. And he offers no. That's the only time in the movie where Travis Bickle reaches out and acknowledges there's something really bad happening inside his head. And that scene kills me every single time I watch it. Every single time. So my favorite is Taxi Driver. Tom's favorite is The Departed, but he thinks that Raging Bull is the best. Where do you guys stand on Scorsese? We're going to talk and read this and rank his movies. There are 29 of them here in this article, and we'll start at the bottom and go up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Scorsese's movie comes out tomorrow, and I can't wait to see it. Pretty cool. What's the name of this band again?
Ovlov. O-V-L-O-V. I'm digging this.
Yeah, no, that sounds cool.
Very good triple play this morning.
Nice. Turning this on to a new band. I like the sound of that. That sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like 90s to me. A little Dinosaur Jr. kind of a feel to it, which is always good.
Yeah.
Always good.
Big mood.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And also next, the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. Martin Scorsese, the legendary filmmaker, has a new movie coming out, and it's always a cause for excitement. And this is particularly exciting. It's a 3.5-hour gangster epic about Jimmy Hoffa and the mob, and it stars Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci and Harvey Keitel, to mention a few. It's always cause for excitement when Scorsese releases a new movie. But they're ranked here. Vulture ranked them. I do not agree with the one that they put at the bottom of the list. The one that they put at the bottom of the list, and I can understand why, is Boxcar Bertha. Gene Siskel, who was prone to flights of moral panic about violence in movies, was disgusted with Boxcar Bertha, calling it trashy. Scorsese's second movie is a little trashy, we suppose, compared to what he'd do later. But considering this was a Roger Corman production, trash was the point, and what Scorsese is trying to work around. It's a noble effort and features a terrific lead performance by a then 23-year-old Barbara Hershey. But it was essentially an audition reel for Scorsese to show what he could do when he makes a real movie. I think Boxcar Bertha is pretty an interesting film. I really do. It's not one of his best. There's no question about it. But for me, if I were going to put one at the bottom of the list, it's Cape Fear. I hate that movie.
That's shocking.
That movie. I truly hate it. And it's the only Martin Scorsese movie that I actively dislike. Now, there are some that I don't like very much and some that I think are flawed, but I can't stand Cape Fear. I just can't stand it. And I was so disappointed.
And you like the original Cape Fear, though?
Oh, absolutely.
That's, oh my God.
Robert Mitchum.
Yeah, Robert Mitchum. Yeah. One of the scariest men of all
absolutely.
Time. Absolutely. I don't mind the
remake. I think he's scarier. Quite frankly, I think he's scarier than Night of the Hunter.
Well, Night of the Hunter is just...
And that's the movie that they basically ran Charles Laughton out of Hollywood after he made that movie. It was the only movie he ever directed.
Yeah, despite the fact that it is a flipping masterpiece.
Oh my God, it's a great film.
That's a movie that influenced Scorsese.
Yeah.
You can tell.
No question. But yeah, I would definitely put Cape Fear at the bottom. Definitely. Next on the list, they put near the bottom, Shine a Light, which is the Rolling Stones movie. This concert film is slight. It doesn't even benefit from capturing the moment in musical history like The Last Waltz. But Scorsese has always been... He's always used music beautifully in his movies. Yeah. And his, you know, I mean, Last Waltz is one of the definitive concert films of all time.
Yeah. And, of course, he was going to make a Rolling Stones thing. He uses the Rolling Stones in, like, every...
Yeah.
It's like a joke at this point that you're gonna hear the Rolling Stones probably, I don't know.
Well, in The Departed, he plays it, like, 9,000 times in the Departed.
Yeah, a bunch of Gimme Shelter in The Departed.
Next on the list is New York, New York. I would put that pretty low on the list, too. New York, New York is a deeply flawed movie. And after the revelation that was Taxi Driver, critics and audiences were initially baffled that Scorsese's follow-up would be an old-timey musical tribute to the golden days of Hollywood. New York, New York was famously a massive flop and one that Scorsese has long attributed to his collapse into cocaine addiction. But seen years later, Marty could have taken it easier on himself. The movie is spotty and odd and never really gels into a coherent whole, but it's still fun, full of enrapturing moments, and it feels more like in keeping with Scorsese's career today than it did on the heels of Taxi Driver. New York, New York is obviously lower-tier Scorsese, but a first-time filmmaker had made this, you'd have called him a budding genius. That's a good point. Yeah, I was never really crazy about New York, New York, and I did think it was kind of an odd follow-up to Taxi Driver, but he was, I mean, he's admitted this, he was doing a lot of blow at that time. Yeah, I mean, and like, he admitted it, like, when they were doing The Last Waltz, he and Robbie Robertson were just out of their minds on coke.
Of course.
So, next they put The Color of Money. I like The Color of Money.
I think that's a little low. I think The Color of Money's pretty good.
I do, too. I mean, it's not as good as The Hustler, but
no.
You know, I think there's great stuff in it. It ended up winning Paul Newman his long-overdue Oscar, and the film often feels like it exists largely for that reason. The Color of Money feels slicker and more self-consciously mainstream than we're used to from Scorsese. For good reason, the project was Newman's, not Scorsese. And as is the case, he would ever be hired gun. It's the only time he had done. He had gone in that direction for his career. Thank God he didn't. He would have been brilliant at it. The movie is crackerjack entertainment. Scorsese brings life to a familiar story of a generally conventional narrative. The movie feels like Scorsese impersonating a lesser but still talented filmmaker, which makes it disorienting to watch, if not necessarily unpleasant. And this remains the only Scorsese film to receive two thumbs down from Siskel and Ebert.
Wow.
That's unfair. It's a very entertaining movie.
Well, I love going back and watching Siskel and Ebert do their reviews on YouTube. And
I watched them review. Just the other night, I watched them review Carpenter's The Thing, and they trashed it.
Yeah, but I've watched their one for Color of Money, and I get what they're saying, but it just I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with it.
No, I think it's a terrific movie.
It's fun. It's
and
not
everybody
best,
in it is
fun.
Really good. Tom Cruise is great in it. Paul Newman is great in it. It's a very good movie, and it's really slickly shot. So, all right, we're going to hit the news here, and then after the news, we will talk more Scorsese. We want to hear from you. Talk or text at 312-981-7200.
A Monday warrior, mean strike. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean cry.
Yeah. Yeah, man, Rush. Triple Play Thursday continues, man. Who requested the Rush? Canadian Bill?
No, it's coming to us from the 815.
Ah, okay.
I hear a little Rush.
Yeah, man. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Phone lines are open. Text lines are open. 312-981-7200. It's always an event when Martin Scorsese releases a movie, especially when it's a 3.5-hour gangster movie with Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci, and that's exactly what The Irishman is. So we're going back and looking back at Martin Scorsese's movies and ranking them. The next one on the list comes in at number 25 is his short from New York Stories, which I love. The other two sucked. The Woody Allen one sucked, and the Coppola one sucked, but Scorsese's was great, and Nolte's fantastic in it. A filmmaking exercise featuring three shorts about characters in New York City by three of the most accomplished American directors of all time, Scorsese, Coppola, and Woody Allen. It ends up playing like a competition between the three, and Scorsese wins rather handily. Yeah, no question about it. His story of a passionate, self-destructive painter, played by Nick Nolte, whose work is fueled by romantic discord with a series of younger, tempestuous lovers, is a little problematic today, but Scorsese's comfort with the material is self-evident. Next, he brings out Bringing Out the Dead. Yeah, I would rank that a little bit low. I think Cage is great in it. But it's kind of like, you know what Bringing Out the Dead kind of plays like? It plays like Scorsese's greatest hits.
A little bit, yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, he's done these themes like 8 million times before, yeah. And he just kind of combines them all into one movie. And
yeah, I just really like the concept. I put it a little bit higher just on personal enjoyment, but I think Bringing Out the Dead is a worthwhile trip, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, and like you said, Cage is great in it. I think he really handles the material.
Oh, no, he's great. Cage is really, really good in it. The Rolling Thunder Review, which is Scorsese's other 2019 Netflix film, is a pseudo-documentary about Bob Dylan's notorious 1975 concert tour that Dylan himself once wrestled into a mostly unwatchable fictional film called Rinaldo and Clara. Scorsese uses the footage of the tour, which is still breathtaking 40 years later, and splices into a series of interviews with Dylan and other members of the tour. Along with, it turns out, various actors, including Sharon Stone, playing entirely fictional characters supposedly connected to the tour. Scorsese has a grand time playing around with Dylan's messing with the legend aesthetic, even if Scorsese is not at heart much of a prankster. But he does find the soul of the tour and intriguingly even Dylan, with an ending that will come out of nowhere to surprise you with its warmth and even if it's triumph. So that's pretty low. They also rank Kundun, which is a movie I love.
Yeah, that's a little, what number is it at?
22.
22? Come on.
I think Kundun is a beautiful movie. Absolutely beautiful movie. Roger Deakins shot that movie. He didn't work with Roger Deakins very often. Philip Glass did the score. It's about the Dalai Lama in different parts of his life. And I think it's a beautiful film. I remember when it came out, everybody was like, what's he doing?
Well, it is very kind of strange.
Yeah. Yeah. We got some texts coming in. Everybody has a favorite Scorsese movie. Alan from Detroit says, King of Comedy is his most underrated film. Got mediocre reviews at the time, but it's one of his very best. I totally agree with that. I think King of Comedy is a great film. And I remember when it came out, it tanked. People hated it. Because it was that was his follow-up to Raging Bull. Like, he had all this incredible success with Raging Bull, all this critical acclaim and everything. De Niro wins the Oscar, and then they follow it up with King of Comedy, one of the most abrasively irritating characters in the history of film.
Rupert Pupkin.
And a really uncomfortable movie to watch. I mean, I've seen it 8,000 times, and every time I watch it, that scene where they just show up at Jerry Lewis's summer home uninvited, I can't, it's difficult for me to watch.
It's unsettling.
It's so good. But yeah, I love King of Comedy. And I think in retrospect, people now love it. But when it came out, man, oh my God.
Yeah, it's definitely got a reevaluation.
Oh yeah. No. People, and it's also a great companion piece to Taxi Driver. It really is. And two wildly different performances by De Niro. De Niro's great in King of Comedy. He's great. And so is Jerry Lewis, man. Jerry Lewis is so good. You know, he improvised some of the, obviously Scorsese allows improvisation. And so that scene where they're in the summer home, De Niro says, well, we didn't mean to do anything wrong. So did Hitler, is what Jerry Lewis screams at him. That was improvised. And apparently Scorsese busted out laughing when he said it. 815 area code says, is the Pickwick Theater the only one playing The Irishman on the 22nd? Well, The Irishman opens at the Landmark, at the two Landmark theaters. The Landmark Century in Chicago, and the Landmark Renaissance. Those are the only two theaters it's opening in now.
And when it comes to the 22nd, I believe it will be on Netflix by that point.
27th it hits Netflix.
27th, so.
Yeah. Yeah. 312 area code says, I have to agree with you about Taxi Driver. I still have the VHS tape from years ago. Yeah, man. Taxi Driver on VHS. 815 area code says, your thoughts on Shutter Island. Personally, I loved it. Super creepy, mind-plucking psychological horror. I love Shutter Island. I love it.
Yeah. It took me a while to really enjoy it. I ended up reading the book, too. It's Dennis Lehane.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I've not read the book, but I love the movie.
Yeah, the movie was really good. Nice little cameo from Robert De Niro as well.
And also, Elias Koteas, who's an actor that I love, he's creepy as hell in it. It's a creepy movie. It's a genuinely creepy movie.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, oh, the twist ending. I don't even see it as a twist ending. Because I knew what was happening. You know what I mean? It wasn't like a big surprise M. Night Shyamalan twist ending. I figured it out.
He lays the groundwork.
No question about
it. It's more of a slow realization. Yeah. By the time you're kind of in the middle of it, you're like, oh my God, this is really something else.
Yeah. And DiCaprio's great in it.
Yeah.
DiCaprio's great in, you know, he works very well with Martin Scorsese. And, but yeah. So the next one, number 21, is Who's That Knocking at My Door? Which is his first movie. I like it, you know. It's a first movie, but you could see where it was going. Number 20, and I would rank this. I gotta say, I would rank this much higher. Hugo, I love that movie. I love that movie. When it came out, I said it was his best movie since Goodfellas. I absolutely love that film. It's a movie about movies, and you could just feel the joy that he put into that film. And everybody is so good in it. Even Sacha Baron Cohen is great in it. And it really was beautiful in 3D. Like, it was one of those movies that I'm glad that I saw in 3D. It loses a bit. But it came out at the zenith of the 3D craze just 2 years after Avatar, but Scorsese made sure to put his own stamp on the format. Hugo is dizzying and playful in a way that Scorsese likes to indulge from time to time. I love it. I would rank that one much higher. Coming in at number 19, Gangs in New York. That's about right. I like Gangs in New York. I don't love it.
It's fine.
But I think, obviously Daniel Day-Lewis is unbelievable in it.
Daniel Day-Lewis steals the show.
Completely. I don't understand the casting of Cameron Diaz. That's the one that confounds me every time. I just don't get it.
And I really don't know what that, I don't know what that movie's about. Like, I know what the plot is. I know generally what the themes are, but I didn't really feel anything after it. Like, anything profound had happened, even though it's a pretty long movie.
It is a very long movie.
I was just like,
It also features a really great song by U2. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite U2 songs is in the soundtrack for that movie. Nick, I was thinking about Scorsese's acting in Taxi Driver. That scene is incredible. It's just so wrong on every level. His rapid fire staccato delivery was something. I was wondering if that was his only turn at acting. Then I saw number 34 for acting on his IMDb. Sometimes he appears as himself. Other small appearances, including brothel patron and Boxcar Bertha. You know, he's actually in Taxi Driver twice. Do you remember the other time he's in it?
No, it's not ringing a bell.
Okay. So obviously he's the patron in the back seat of the car who's going to kill his wife, which is a really insanely creepy scene, and Scorsese's great in it. But he's also on the street sitting in front of a bank with a Columbia Pictures t-shirt on. He's sitting there as Travis Bickle is walking past him. And it's one of those montage scenes where Travis Bickle is writing a letter. They cannot touch her. You know that part where they cannot? That's right there. He's walking past in slow motion, and Scorsese's just sitting there, and he just kind of turns around and looks at him.
Huh.
Yeah. So he's in it twice. He's in Taxi Driver. So I don't know if it's the same guy. I don't know if he plays the same character. I like to think it's the same character.
Yeah. I didn't know he was in Quiz Show.
Yeah. Yeah. How about his cameo in King of Comedy?
Oh yeah,
he's hilarious in that.
Oh jeez,
he plays the director of the Jerry Langford Show. I think it's funny when they're talking about the bad material, the bad joke. He goes, I think it's funny. Yeah, he's appeared in a bunch of movies. Scorsese. He's in The Muse. He's hilarious in The Muse, the Albert Brooks movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's absolutely hysterical in that movie. So he's appeared in his own movies. He's appeared in some other people's movies, too. But he's made appearances on screen. All right, Martin Scorsese talk continues, and we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. What are your favorite Scorsese movies? And we'll continue to go through the rankings here of all of his movies on the eve of the release of The Irishman, which all Scorsese fans are really looking forward to. Oh, a deep cut. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., and Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. I forgot to do the weather before we took a break there. So here's your weather for the morning and the day and Friday and Saturday and Sunday and Monday. How about that? Here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, light snow, possibly mixed with freezing rain early, and then mostly cloudy. It'll be high in the mid to upper 40s and a low in the upper 20s, and we'll get some increase in wind. For tomorrow, early morning sun, and then we'll have afternoon clouds. It'll be unseasonably cold again with a high in the low 30s. For Saturday, partly sunny, warmer, high around 50, clouding up overnight with a brief shower. On Sunday, mostly cloudy, becoming windy, brief showers possible, high in the low 40s, chance of light snow or flurries overnight. And then on Monday, mostly cloudy, windy, and cold. We could have a record low max temp for the day in the middle 20s with wind chills in the teens. Cloudy, light snow, and flurries possible overnight. It's currently 28 degrees at O'Hare. It's 30 at Midway, 31 at the lakefront. All right, let's get back to it. Martin Scorsese's got a movie coming out, and it's always an event, and it's always great, and it's The Irishman, and we're all looking forward to it. And we want to hear from you guys. What are your favorite Martin Scorsese movies? 312-981-7200. The next one on the list is coming in at number 18 is Silence, which is a movie I actually like. I don't love, but I like. Scorsese had essentially been attempting to make Silence for his entire career, and watching it, you can see why he had such difficulty talking anyone into giving him money to make it. The movie is a long, grueling journey of faith and pain about two priests, Andrew Garfield and Adam Driver, on their own journey of faith and pain. Silence is about enlightenment born of strife and torture, and it can feel that way at times, which is Scorsese's intent. But where it lands and where we all end up in the story with the emergence of the priest mentor played by Liam Neeson, it is a terrific, it becomes a terrific movie.
Yeah, that was required viewing for us when we were in college.
Silence?
Because I went to Loyola, and it's a Jesuit school.
Sure.
Go Blurs.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Next, coming in at number 17, The Last Temptation of Christ. I love this movie. I love The Last Temptation of Christ. It's also probably my favorite music score of all time.
Yeah, little Peter Gabriel.
It's such a great score. I would rank Last Temptation much higher than 17.
For the controversy alone.
I mean, I just thought it was great. It's a beautiful movie. The blasphemy heard round the world with this adaptation of Niko Kazantzakis's that novel dared to depict Jesus as a deeply human individual filled with pre-natural kindness and humility, but also tempted to abandon his holy mission and run away with Mary Magdalene, played by Barbara Hershey. The Last Temptation of Christ is, to date, Scorsese's only collaboration with Willem Dafoe, who would seem like an ideal actor for the director's impassioned, tortured aesthetic. Nevertheless, Dafoe made this one count, playing Jesus as a mortal who aspires to live up to God's image. He wanted to bring it back into the body of a man, and I felt like I was ready to do that, Dafoe said later about Scorsese's take on Christ. And while the film has its weaknesses and uninspired segments, what comes through is the director's genuine spiritual searching, his deep admiration for the momentousness of Jesus's quest. Plus, it has one of Scorsese's most moving finales, a true reckoning. It's a beautiful ending. It's overwhelming, actually. It is a. It is the final words. It is accomplished. It's just a. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. And you know, it's funny because he was accused of blasphemy. You know, when the movie came out, people were protesting it without having seen it. But the movie is deeply spiritual, and he's a full on Catholic, and the take on Jesus, you know, it's a fascinating take, but it's also not offensive at all. You know what I mean? It's got a beautiful ending that ends the way that Christians, you know, how Christians feel and believe. It's not at all blasphemous. In fact, it's a deeply beautiful spiritual movie. And man, Defoe is great in it.
Oh, that's a top 10 performance.
He's so good in it. And I can't say enough about the score. I've got the soundtrack and I've listened to it. I used to just blast it in my car. People thought I was weird.
Well, it's rare that a soundtrack can stand on its own. Like you don't have to have ever seen The Last Temptation of Christ to enjoy that score.
Oh, absolutely.
For exactly what it is.
Yeah. It is a magnificent music score. Peter Gabriel did a beautiful job with it. Coming in number 16, I can't believe this, Cape Fear. That's way too high.
Some people are really into Cape Fear.
I can't stand that movie. Scorsese's remake, originally Steven Spielberg was going to make it, and he wanted to cast Bill Murray as Max Cady.
Yes!
I would pay to see that.
Oh, my God.
I would totally pay to see Bill Murray play that part. Turns a traditional legal thriller into something scary, twisted, and at times thrillingly revolting. This is Scorsese in Hitchcock mode, but he's too singular a filmmaker to do some sort of Brian De Palma-esque homage. Hey. Easy. Easy on the Brian De Palma slams, buddy. You just happen to be encountering the biggest Brian De Palma fan on the planet.
I would have liked to see Brian De Palma make Cape Fear.
Oh, sure. I like to see Brian De Palma make anything.
Brian De Palma's The Last Temptation of Christ.
Listen, you know, I like Brian De Palma so much, I adore Raising Cain. I love that movie. And I remember that was the angriest crowd I've ever seen in a movie theater. It was a promotional screening. WGCI gave away the tickets, and I got them through, you know, obviously because I'm a critic, we would sometimes get. And that was the only screening they were doing, which is not a good sign. Normally when they screen a movie like on a Thursday night, it's not a good sign, especially if there's not like a critic screening ahead of time. And I went, obviously, because I love De Palma, and people were throwing stuff. They were booing at the end of the movie. I thought there was going to be a riot in the theater. I love them. I think Lithgow's great in it. He's having a blast in that movie. But yeah, people hate that movie. I'm trying to think of De Palma movies I don't. Oh, I hated his last one. I can't remember what it was called. Possession?
Oh, are we talking about Domino?
Oh, Domino was terrible too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Possession was bad. Domino was bad. He's made a couple of bad movies in the past.
Yeah, some real stinkers.
But Scorsese finds the pain and the sickness in De Niro's Katie, but the lawyer Sam Bowden, played by Nick Nolte and his family, De Niro has the showiest performance. You can sense him and Scorsese having fun just making a big Hollywood thriller that's this disturbing. It's not the finest art of Scorsese's career, but many of its images will last forever alongside some of his greatest films. And it led to one of the greatest Simpsons episodes ever. All right, yeah. Yeah, I'll go with that. I'll go with that for sure. Is that the episode where we're first introduced to Sideshow Bob stepping on rakes? Was that the first time they did that?
It might be.
Funny every time. Every time. I like when his brother shows up and it's played and he's voiced by David Hyde Pierce in the dam episode where he's going to blow up the dam. And David Hyde Pierce, he goes up behind David Hyde Pierce and he covers his eyes and he goes, guess who? And he goes, Maris?
You got to have the Frasier joke.
Oh,
come on,
man.
You must. But yeah, it must be the first, I think it's the first time that
the rake joke appears.
Well, it's a return of, it's the return of guest star Kelsey Grammer as Sideshow Bob. So I think he appears one time before.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they do the rake bit.
I think the rake bit shows up the first time in the Cape Fear episode.
Yeah.
So always Sideshow Bob, always funny. Always funny. Every episode featuring Sideshow Bob is great. So, all right, more Scorsese talk. We got some texts coming in. We'll read those, and I'll take your phone calls at 312-981-7200, and we'll do that after the news, which is coming up next. Nature creatures would be desperados. Clutch a plausible deniability. Don't touch that dial. Roll the Bones.
No, Tess for Echo.
Oh, Tess for Echo, right. Wow. One little deep cuts on the Rush this morning. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Yeah. So we're talking about Martin Scorsese movies. Martin Scorsese has a new movie coming out, and it's a big one. It's called The Irishman. It's a 3.5-hour gangster epic with Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci, and Harvey Keitel. Always exciting when Scorsese releases a movie, so we're talking about his best movies and ranking them. 312 area code says Raging Bull and Goodfellas are his best movies. Both great. Absolutely great. 815 area code says, I love The Age of Innocence. It's exquisite and moving. I do, too. I remember catching a lot of flack from my friends for liking that movie. Like, why is Scorsese making a Merchant Ivory film? What is happening? It's a really good movie. All right. Coming in at number 15 is The Last Waltz, which is sort of the definitive concert movie of all time. Featuring, you know, obviously the band, but you got Neil Young, Van Morrison, Muddy Waters, Eric Clapton, Ronnie Hawkins, Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Neil Diamond. It is classically, it is a classic a concert movie. Coming at number 14, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. That's about right. I would put that at right around that area. Ellen Burstyn is ridiculously good in it. Ellen Burstyn is one of my favorite actresses on the planet. Really, truly, one of my favorite actresses on the planet. It might be, there, you know, that might also be one of the reasons why I lost it at the end of Interstellar, is because it's her playing the role.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love her. I mean, she's truly one of my favorite actresses of all time. And it affected me even more because it was Ellen Burstyn. I'm like, oh man, it's Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah.
Is Alice the most fully realized female character of any Scorsese film? That's a distinct possibility. It's both an indictment of Scorsese's career and a recognition of how perfect a character Ellen Burstyn and Martin Scorsese created in his first Hollywood movie. Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore feels both fussed over and lived in. It's remarkably assured, confident, and sensitive from a filmmaker who had just up to the year before that made a film about Catholic guilt, misogyny, and rage. Up to this point, Scorsese looked like a future star, and it appeared that he was capable of anything. Yeah, it's an unusual. A lot of people forget that he directed that movie because it's not like a Scorsese movie of any kind.
No.
And it's female-driven. And it inspired a sitcom. I always think it's hilarious. I talked about this yesterday the day before when we were talking about 70s sitcoms. I always think it's hilarious that Alice, the sitcom with Linda Lavin, was inspired by a Martin Scorsese movie. It's like, wow, okay. Number 13 is After Hours. Too low. Too low. I love After Hours. I adore that movie. I would put it maybe in my top five Scorsese movies. That's how much I love After Hours. It is such a great movie. In a sense, After Hours is a movie about how Martin Scorsese couldn't get his then-dream project, The Last Temptation of Christ, off the ground. Frustrated, he decided to blow off steam by working on a down-and-dirty, dark comedy about a working stiff, played by Griffin Dunne, who gets sucked into a surreal night of beautiful women, dangerous men, and weird farce. I thought it was a whole metaphor for the way we are living and for what I went through in L.A. trying to get The Last Temptation made, Scorsese once said. I just had a ball with it because it meant so much to me. I asked myself, can I make a picture with the same energy that I had when I was 32? And I did. He was 42 when After Hours came out. And after years of aborted projects and commercial disappointments like The King of Comedy, the film felt alive and dangerous. The work of a director who quite simply just wanted to make a picture. Its giddy punk rock purity remains intoxicating. Do you like After Hours?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think it's it's got an interesting place in his filmography. I would largely agree with the Vulture, but I'd put a little bit lower. It's not something I'm going to revisit that often, but no, I like
see, it. That for me, that's you know, our good friend Colin Suter. That's his favorite Scorsese movie.
It's After Hours.
Yeah, it's his favorite Scorsese movie. It's in my top five. I would put After Hours in my top five, and I think Griffin Dunne is great in it, and it's very funny and really twisted, and creepy, like scary.
Yeah,
and
do
you remember his cameo?
Oh God, what is he doing that one? It's been ages.
Scorsese in After Hours.
I don't remember.
When Griffin Dunne is in the nightclub running through by the fence, Scorsese is the spotlight operator. He's like a robotic spotlight operator in it.
Jeez.
Yeah, no, After Hours, man, I really liked it. And I think it deserves a little bit more respect than it gets. I think a lot of people are kind of dismissive of it because it didn't make a lot of money when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And he just made it on a lark. Cheech and Chong are in it, man.
That is true. Tommy Chong's in that new Nick Cage movie.
Yeah. Hey, you know who's fantastic in After Hours? Terry Garr.
Yeah, Terry.
Oh my God. Oh my God. All the women. Catherine O'Hara is great in it.
Yeah,
Rosanna
Arquette.
Linda Fiorentino.
Yeah.
It's a terrific movie, man.
I do appreciate that in the credits he's listed as Thomas Chong.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Thomas.
Thomas Chong, as opposed to Tommy Chong. No, it's a Scorsese movie.
Yeah, Mr. Thomas Chong.
That's right. I would be Nicholas DiGilio if I were in a Scorsese movie.
Yes.
Scorsese, man. Oh, man.
I'd still be Tomas.
Yeah. All right.
It's still snappy.
Next is the number 12 on the list is Age of Innocence. Which I like a little bit more than I think most people do.
Yeah, the average bear.
An Edith Wharton costume drama would seem the opposite of Scorsese's inclinations, but as usual, if you thought Scorsese was just about gangsters and violence, that said more about you than it did about him. Scorsese realized that passion, disguised and repressed, like in this case, in the case of crushed, devastated Newland Archer, Daniel Day-Lewis is one of his most underappreciated performances, can be as emotionally violent as the blood spurting out of Jake LaMotta's eye. Scorsese's famous attention to detail has never looked so lush or luxurious. Everything is so beautiful and exquisite that it just accentuates how raw and aching the characters are underneath it all. Yeah, I gotta say, I was really surprised at how much I liked Age of Innocence. I really was, because I was being a little cynical about it, too. You know?
Sure.
Because, you know, I'm like, Scorsese, what is he doing? But I thought it was a gorgeous movie. It is, and just, if anything, just like to look at that movie is breathtaking. Like, it is a beautiful, who shot that movie?
So that was shot by, let's see here, Michael Ballas.
Oh, sure.
Who is an immensely talented.
Yeah, he's shot a lot of Scorsese movies. Now, here's one that I don't like, besides Cape Fear. Is the other one, I don't like The Wolf of Wall Street. I do not like The Wolf of Wall Street.
Is it just because it's...
He's made Taxi Driver already.
You mean Goodfellas?
Goodfellas.
Yeah.
Because if you close your eyes and listen to the voiceover of DiCaprio, he sounds exactly like Ray Liotta.
He does. He does.
And it's unnecessary. And it's way too long.
I do find it immensely entertaining, though, and a very important look into the opulence and excess of the late 80s and early 90s.
Listen, you are in the majority.
Yeah.
I'm definitely in the minority on this one, because when it came out, everybody loved it. And it made a lot of money, and people thought it was great and very entertaining. I did not like it.
What about Jonah Hill as Donnie
no.
Azoff?
No.
Or you've got Rob Reiner as his dad, too.
Yeah.
The conversation they have.
I've only seen it once.
Really?
Yeah, I've only seen it once. I disliked it. I disliked it. When it was over, I was like, gee, and, you know, and it was so long. I mean, I know that The Irishman is 3.5 hours long.
Yeah, come
that,
on.
The Wolf of Wall Street felt like it was 10 hours long.
Did I ever tell you how I saw that movie?
Oh, you saw The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah, Christmas Day. Whole family.
Oh, right. That's right.
Mom was just like, you know what? We're going to do something different.
Man.
My dad had passed the year before, and she's just like, you know what? We're going to do something different. We're going to do something different for Christmas this year. We're going to go to the movies. We've never done that before. Let's do this. What's out?
Oh, man.
Let's go see The Wolf of Wall Street. It's Martin Scorsese. It's Leo DiCaprio. Yeah. That opening scene where he's doing blow. I'm like, come on. My brother couldn't have been older than 12 at the time.
Margot Robbie, I mean, what can you say about that?
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
Talk about talent.
I liked her in the movie.
I mean, it totally launched her career.
Oh, yeah.
It totally launched her career.
Rampant exposure to this movie on cable suggests that Scorsese's bilious portrait of Jordan Belfort may soon join Goodfellas as one of the director's most intensely rewatchable efforts. Really? And like Goodfellas, that evergreen entertainment value doesn't mean Scorsese admires the denizens he's chronicling. The Wolf of Wall Street is a three-hour deep dive into greed and arrogance, removing the moral guardrails that usually insulate viewers so they can fully appreciate and be horrified by the sickening approaches and overindulgence on display. DiCaprio is glorious as Belfort, an absolute jerk before he's rich and even a bigger one afterwards. Meanwhile, Scorsese utilizes his old tricks, rocking soundtracks, swirling cameras, multiple voiceovers to unearth a Wall Street ecosystem that's immune to the laws and ethics the rest of us have to obey. Kyle Chandler is the one glimmer of decency in the film, and he's treated very shabbily. Sometimes the film's examination of excess can be excessive, but Wolf of Wall Street is hypnotizing and a damning condemnation of us poor rubes. So... yeah, I can't go there with that.
Fair enough.
Can't.
Fair enough. I know a lot of people that don't like it. I don't think you're as in the minority as you might think. Yeah. There's a lot of people that I've met that really have a problem with Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah. Now, the next movie that we're going to talk about after the break is absolutely one of my favorites and is not considered one of his, you know, like his most revered movies. But it is absolutely one of my favorites that Scorsese has ever made. And it's kind of an unusual choice. But, Scorsese's got a new movie coming out, and everybody's very happy about it. Now we're going to tell you about the weather, and we'll come back and break, and then wrap up the show and the Scorsese talk right here on a Thursday morning. Oh, I'm disappointed we're not going to hear two more songs. Who requested the ELO?
It's coming to us from James.
Oh, man, I'm a little disappointed. I'd love to hear two more ELO songs this morning. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline Studio, 18 stories about beautiful downtown Chicago, here till 5. Steve Grzanich is next at 5 o'clock with the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Talking about Martin Scorsese and his movies. What are your favorites? The Irishman opens tomorrow. A 3.5-hour gangster epic with Al Pacino, Robert De Niro, and Joe Pesci and Harvey Keitel. It's got all the makings of what could be great. So we got some texts that have come in. 312-981-7200. 724 area code says, I didn't like Wolf of Wall Street as much as I thought I would and should, and that's disappointing because I used to do that for a living and absolutely love Boiler Room and Wall Street. 815 area code says, Boiler Room was a way better look at the 80s than Wolf. Get some Boiler Room fans out there. All right, this article from Vulture.com ranks the Scorsese movies, and we're at number 10. And here's the one that I was teasing before the break. I love this movie and would put it in the top three or four, The Aviator. I adore that movie, and I think DiCaprio is fantastic. And, of course, Kate Blanchett won the Academy Award for it. The crash scene? Oh, my God. Another project that was batted around from director to director, including Michael Mann, Milos Forman, and Christopher Nolan. It ended up in Scorsese's hands. It's a great movie about Howard Hughes. I love that movie, and I love the way it captures Hollywood. It is so beautifully photographed and edited, and the acting is so good. I think it's a great movie, a beautiful Hollywood epic. Do you like The Aviator?
I do like it. I think it is a really good turn for Leo. I think The Aviator is when I started taking Leo really seriously.
Uh-huh.
Because prior to that, I was just like, oh yeah, Titanic, big deal.
Well, had you seen This Boy's Life?
No. I had not seen it yet. Okay. I hadn't seen The Basketball Diaries yet.
Yeah.
I had not seen...
Well, This Boy's Life was right out of the gate. I was like, this guy's unbelievable. This kid's unbelievable.
All I knew him as was 90s heartthrob.
Right.
Aviator changed that for me. I said, this guy's serious.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
I've always been a fan of his. And it's because it's because I saw This Boy's Life when it first came out. And I was like, this kid is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Toe-to-toe with De Niro in that movie.
Yeah. To me, he was, I think, I caught him on Growing Pains.
Yeah, he was on Growing Pains, yeah.
With Alan Thicke.
Yeah.
So, you know, no, I took him very seriously. I
mean, Titanic changed everything for the guy. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like, it changed everything. And, you know, he became like a superstar and a heartthrob. And I've said this before, about Titanic, because I backed that movie. I've said this before. When that boat hits the iceberg, the rest of that movie kicks ass. It's great. Before that, you know, the romantic stuff, it goes on for too long. But once that boat hits the iceberg, that movie rules. So, and again, you want to play a drinking game. Drink every time they say Jack and or Rose. Because they say, I don't know what the number is, but they say each other's names like 5,000 times in that movie.
I do love Billy Zane.
Yeah, Billy Zane. You should listen to your friend Billy Zane.
I have a child.
Yeah.
I have a child.
By the way, his lovely sister Lisa's got a gig coming up. Maybe we can get her back on.
Yeah, we'll see if she's around.
They rank The Irishman number 9. So they've seen it, and they like it, which is a good sign. Good sign. Number 8 is Shutter Island. Pretty high on the list, Shutter Island.
It's got a lot of fans.
Yeah. We were talking about it a little bit earlier. It's a terrific movie. Number 7 on the list is, there you go, your favorite, The Departed.
There you go.
I do like the movie. I think it's really great. I just don't think I wouldn't say it's my favorite.
Your boy Marky Mark is batting a thousand.
Fantastic in that movie. All the supporting performances are great in The Departed. Well, actually, all the performances are great in The Departed.
Oh.
Nicholson's having a blast in that movie.
Oh, who are you? I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy. amazing.
Yeah. Here's Mike on WGN. Hey, Mike.
Good morning, Nick. How
morning.
You doing?
Good, man.
One of my favorite directors, man. I really appreciate that. You had the Raging Bull playing at your screening. I took my son to see it. He loved it.
That was fun, man, to host a screening of Raging Bull. That was just so much fun.
And the first time I came across Scorsese, I grew up in New York, and the WNBC outlet on Sunday nights from the 60s through the 70s used to show edgy movies, foreign movies, new wave movies,
and by
mid-70s they were showing the new school Hollywood movies at late night on Sundays, and they showed Mean Street. Mean Street. And at that time, they didn't have the sophisticated bleeping technology or where they'd have words.
Yeah.
So whenever it got a little, the language got a little over the top, they'd have clashing garbage
cans. Oh, is that right?
On the soundtrack.
That's hilarious. No, yeah, actually, Mike, Mean Streets is my second favorite. Scorsese.
It's a great movie.
It is a phenomenal movie. And the brawl in the pool room is hilarious. What's a mook? That whole thing. They scam those kids out of the money, and then they go see The Searchers.
And don't forget the Carradine brothers.
Yeah.
Robert Culkin.
So it's such a weird scene. It is such a weird scene. De Niro's great in it, and I love the real abrupt ending. I thought it was, I adore that movie. I really do. And I think it's Keitel's best performance ever, is in Mean Streets.
Great movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
I mean, oh, man, I just got blown away.
Yeah.
So
it also,
everything Scorsese does.
Yeah, me too. So. But it also has one of the most accurate depictions of what it's like to be drunk ever in a movie. When Keitel is loaded and the camera's shaking and everybody's throwing stuff in his face, it's fantastic.
So, yeah.
All right, Mike, thanks, man.
All right, bud.
Okay, Mean Streets. Number 6, way too high. Here's another one that I don't like very much, Casino.
I think Casino is good. It's probably the lesser, to me, of a lot of his gangster pictures.
Yeah.
But it's got some great moments. Like
it's got Don Rickles.
Yeah. Puts the guy's head in the vice.
Oh, no, man. Yeah. Casino did not do it for me at all. I liked Don Rickles, and I didn't like the fact that he got smashed in the head with a phone. That was the only thing I didn't like. Number 5 is Mean Streets. Again, my second favorite of all his movies. 4, King of Comedy, ranked really high, as it should be.
It's a good move.
A really underrated movie. Number 3, Raging Bull, which I thought would be number 1. And Raging Bull, obviously a great film. Number two is Taxi Driver, which is my favorite, and number one is Goodfellas.
There you go.
Yeah. And I can understand that. I mean,
when you have those three, you can kind of just move them around interchangeably make a good argument.
He just, Goodfellas is just such a legendary movie, man. Here's funny. The first time I saw Goodfellas, and I've only seen it about 17,000 times. The first time I saw Goodfellas, I went with my buddy Scott Oaken. We went to a screening of it. And we were running late, so we didn't have time to get anything to eat. Now, have you ever been hungry while you're watching Goodfellas? Because it's torture. It's torture.
A lot of good food.
There's a ton of great food. And I'm Italian, man, and I love my Italian food. And we were both like sitting there going, oh, and it's almost 3 hours long. Goodfellas is a long movie.
Long one.
So we're like, oh, God. We immediately went to like a Burger King or something afterwards and just scarfed. I was so hungry. Come on, man. The scene where they're in jail and they're cooking, the razor blade, Paul Sorvino with the razor blade and the garlic. Scorsese's real dad working on the sausage.
Yeah.
It's, oh.
Amazing.
And it's such a great movie. It is such a great movie. You know that the studio wanted to cut the scene with his mother out? When she brings out her painting?
Yeah.
I like this guy. His dog's like, what do you want from me? Hey, can I borrow this knife? Because I'm going to stab a guy to death with it.
Oh, jeez.
Such a great movie. Oh, man. I mean, there's a reason why. And then, I mean, that whole sequence with the helicopters. What can you say about that sequence? It's just amazing.
Paranoia.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible. So, all right. So that's Scorsese. I'm really looking forward to the Irishman. I got a good feeling about it. I'm really looking forward to it. So, hey, tomorrow we're going to talk with a guy who wrote a book about Match Game.
Match Game 101.
Match Game 101 is the name of the book. We'll talk with the author and obviously Match Game, greatest game show of all time. So we'll talk all about that tomorrow on the show and have all the regular Friday features. So make sure you tune in for that.